Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lincoln and California, The President, the War, and the Golden State, by Brian McGinty. Narrated by Tom Perkins. Introduction. The ties that bound Abraham Lincoln to California, and California to Abraham Lincoln, have been ignored by too many writers and historians. The great Civil War president has been the subject of thousands of books, yet his important relationship with the Western state, both before and during the war, the key part it played in bringing on the conflict, and the vital help it gave him in winning it, have been little described and only imperfectly understood. Lincoln never set foot in California. He never spent a day visiting it. He did, however, often speak of his hope that he could one day go there. He did repeatedly say that he might like to make it his and his family's home after he left the White House. He was never able to do that, of course, because another tragic event intervened. But the connections between Lincoln and California were not merely hopes or desires. Lincoln had been drawn to the West since his birth in 1809. He had moved with his family from the then western state of Kentucky into western Indiana, then farther west into Illinois, and looking even farther west across the Mississippi toward the plains and the mountains that extended to the distant horizon. While serving in Congress in the 1840s, he had described himself as a Western Free State man and ardently championed the construction of railroads that would stretch across the continent as far as California's Pacific coast. When Oregon, California's northern neighbor, sought to become a state, Lincoln was offered important official positions there, which he declined, and one that he sought but did not receive. His legendary debates with Senator Stephen Douglas in 1858 had focused on his opposition to the threatened westward spread of slavery into Kansas and Nebraska, and the even further spread of slavery wherever the voters, whites, not blacks, and men, not women, wanted it to spread. The slaveholders in the South hoped to expand slavery westward as far as California, making their slave empire one that would grow in size, strength, and power, and become sustainable into the indefinite future. Without California, the Great Civil War might never have been fought. Led by the slave-owning president, James Knox Polk, Congress had declared war with Mexico, authorizing the U.S. Army and Navy to invade the country and seize California, hoping to incorporate all or part of it into the South's slaveholding empire. The threat that Lincoln might prevent them from doing so gave rise to the secession led by the slave-owning Confederate President Jefferson Davis and the fearsome combat that followed. Lincoln had opposed the war with Mexico, the war that his political hero Henry Clay called a most unnecessary and horrible war, and that Ulysses S. Grant, the man he chose to lead the Union Army to victory in the Civil War, more tersely described as a wicked war. After it was fought and won, however, Lincoln was willing to accept California as one of the states, to pay close attention to it when he was president, and to eagerly make use of the many and important strengths it brought to the nation as the Civil War was being fought. Vast quantities of gold and silver that helped finance the Union war effort, and volunteer troops and professional soldiers who helped keep the secessionist slave power from capturing the state. So at the end of the terrible conflict, California emerged dramatically as a symbol of the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness that Lincoln cherished and sought to preserve. This book describes important people who, beginning early in Lincoln's life, drew his attention to the West and to California. Among them were Charles Maltby, the one-time store clerk who shared his life with Lincoln in New Salem, Illinois, in 1832 and, after crossing the plains to begin a new life in California in 1849, sought and received appointments to federal offices in the state from Lincoln, then wrote the first California published biography of the deceased president. James Short, a man who farmed land a few miles north of New Salem and became one of Lincoln's friends, eventually receiving an appointment from him as an Indian agent in California, and James A. McDougall, a twice-elected attorney general of Illinois who participated in court cases there, in which Lincoln was also an attorney, but went to California in 1849 and was there elected as its attorney general, as one of its U.S. congressmen, and in 1861 as one of its U.S. senators, communicating duly with Lincoln. John Hanks, a cousin of Lincoln's mother who lived and worked with Lincoln in both Indiana and Illinois, was largely responsible for Lincoln's popular reputation as a rail splitter, and in the early 1850s spent 3 years in the gold fields of California. Richard J. Oglesby, an Illinois-based lawyer and politician who helped John Hanks make Lincoln known to millions as the rail splitter, but later joined the California Gold Rush, returned to Illinois where he supported Lincoln's rise to the presidency and served as a major general in the Civil War, as a U.S. senator from Illinois, and as a 3-time governor of the state. The legendary Western explorer John C. Fremont, popularly called the Pathfinder, was one of the first 2 United States senators representing California, the first presidential nominee of the newly formed Republican Party, and, by appointment of Lincoln, the tragic commander of the Union Army in war-torn Missouri. James Shields, the Irish-born attorney who, in 1842, challenged Lincoln to a duel that was never fought, served in many official positions, including as a U.S. senator representing 3 states, Illinois, Minnesota, and Missouri. After moving to California in 1861, Shields was commissioned by Lincoln as a brigadier general of U.S. volunteers. Ulysses S. Grant, William Tecumseh Sherman, Henry W. Halleck, Joseph Hooker, and Winfield Scott Hancock were all West Point graduates who served the nation in pre-war California and struggled to achieve victory as Union generals under Lincoln's command after the conflict began. Edward D. Ned Baker, whom Lincoln described as his dearest personal friend, was a fierce fighter and eloquent orator who helped establish the Republican Party in California before becoming a U.S. senator from Oregon. Baker campaigned in 1860 for Lincoln's election as president in both Oregon and California, personally introducing Lincoln to the gathered crowd at the U.S. Capitol when he was inaugurated president in March 1861. In October 1861, Baker met a tragic death in the Civil War Battle of Ball's Bluff, causing Lincoln to sob bitterly. Leland Stanford was one of the founders of the Republican Party in California, governor of the state during the Civil War, and president of the Central Pacific Railroad, which was preparing to build the transcontinental railroad that Lincoln and other Republicans so vigorously supported. John Conness, an Irish-born U.S. senator representing California, helped raise the funds necessary to fight the war and introduce the bill that Lincoln signed, making California's magnificent Yosemite Valley the first national park set aside under federal law for the permanent benefit of the public. Noah Brooks, the California-based journalist who became one of Lincoln's closest friends in war-torn Washington and, using the pen name Castine, sent 258 fact-filled letters from Washington to Sacramento before returning to finish his writing career in the Pacific Coast state. The book also includes an important discussion of the suffering that California's Native Americans endured after Europeans first appeared in their midst, and of President Lincoln's failure to do anything to better their conditions, partly because of his preoccupation with the Civil War then threatening the dissolution of the nation, and partly because he did not really understand their plight. He did say more than once that he hoped he could help them after the war concluded, but whether he would in fact have done so remains a subject of disagreement among historians who have studied the subject. The book includes recollections of Lincoln's oft-stated wish that he could visit California after he left the White House, perhaps even make a home there for himself and his family, climb to the top of Lone Mountain where Edward Baker's body was buried, and look out over the Golden Gate and the Pacific Ocean. It concludes with a description of the fascinating ways in which California and Californians have remembered Lincoln, including notable sculptures erected to honor his memory, the building of the Lincoln Memorial Shrine in Redlands, California, the only museum and research center dedicated to Abraham Lincoln west of the Mississippi, the planning and construction of the Lincoln Highway, the first transcontinental automobile road, built between New York City and Lincoln Park in San Francisco, honoring the deceased president and providing the nation's first coast-to-coast vehicular travel route, the creation of the Lincoln-Roosevelt League, a political organization that promoted the enactment of many of the political reforms inspired by Lincoln, the creation of the Progressive, or Bull Moose, political party that nominated California's Governor Hiram Johnson as the vice presidential candidate to run with presidential candidate Theodore Roosevelt in 1912, and the inspiration that California's three-time elected governor and U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice Earl Warren derived from the memory of Lincoln, as in 1954 he led the nation's highest court to make its monumental decision ending racial segregation in the United States. This book has its roots in my deep and abiding fascination with both Lincoln and California. My interest in Lincoln's life and work was kindled by his early life as a lawyer and his experiences helping men and women in mid-19th century Illinois solve their legal problems. My interest in California grew out of my birth and long life in the western state and my own experience as a practicing lawyer there. As I studied Lincoln's life, I developed more respect and sympathy for the issues he faced and the gifts he brought to the presidency in the time of its greatest crisis. As I studied California's history, I learned more about Lincoln's growing interest in the state, what it did to help him preserve the Union, and, ultimately, to kindle his hope to visit there or perhaps even make his home there. Although this book focuses on only one of the United States, it is no more a local or regional history than my previous books about Lincoln may be described as merely legal history, judicial history, or transportation history. It includes important information about other western states that had an important effect on Lincoln's efforts to save the Union: Arizona, Nevada, Idaho, and, quite importantly, Oregon, where some of his friends settled and kept him advised about developments there, and where he received invitations to assume key federal positions. It is a story of the powerful ties that bound an important state and region together with an important president, and the historic contributions that all of them made to the beginning and the conclusion of the Civil War. 1. April 14, 1865. April 14, 1865 began as one of the happiest days and one of the happiest weeks in Abraham Lincoln's life. It was Good Friday, and news of the end of the war that had so cruelly racked the nation for the previous 4 years was elevating the president's feelings and those of the people who lived in Washington. He arose at 7 o'clock, put on a faded dressing gown and a pair of well-worn slippers, and walked down the hall to the family sitting room on the second floor of the White House. There, he read a chapter or two of the Bible, as was his habit, before moving on to his office, where he tended to some correspondence. At about 8 o'clock, he went downstairs to the family dining room, where he joined his wife Mary, his 21-year-old son, Union Army Captain Robert T. Lincoln, and his 12-year-old son Tad, for breakfast. Robert had witnessed the surrender of Confederate General Robert E. Lee to Union Lieutenant General Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia, on Palm Sunday, April 9th, and brought details of it to his father. He also brought a portrait of General Lee, which Lincoln scanned thoughtfully before saying, "It is a good face. It is the face of a noble, brave man. I am glad the war is over at last." Lincoln met with his cabinet from 11 o'clock until 2 in the afternoon, discussing a myriad of issues relating to the upcoming reconstruction of the rebellious southern states. General Grant attended the meeting, advising Lincoln and his cabinet secretaries of the details of Lee's surrender. When the meeting concluded, the cabinet members commented on the president's happy mood. "That is the most satisfactory cabinet meeting I have attended in many a long day," said Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton. "Didn't our chief look grand today?" Many members of Congress came to the White House to congratulate Lincoln on the successful conclusion of the war and to discuss other business that concerned them. One was Indiana's Schuyler Colfax, Speaker of the House of Representatives, who was planning to leave the next day for a trip to California. Another was Cornelius Cole, a congressman from California who was planning to return to his home state and meet with his constituents. Colfax's journey would be overland, while Cole would be going to New York to board a steamship that would take him south to Panama, where he would cross the isthmus by train, and then board another steamer for a voyage north to San Francisco. Meeting Lincoln together, Colfax and Cole asked Lincoln if he was planning to convene a special session of Congress to deal with Reconstruction issues. If he was, they would call off their California journeys so they could attend. Lincoln told them he was not. They then asked him about controversial announcements made by Major General Godfrey Weitzel, the acting military governor of Richmond, regarding public prayers in that city's churches. They did not want the preachers there to be allowed to perpetuate secessionist sentiment. Lincoln assured them that he had communicated with Weitzel regarding that matter and that he was satisfied with what the general was permitting. The president was in a talkative mood and spoke happily with Colfax and Cole about their California travel plans. "You are going to California, I hear," he said to Colfax. "How I would love to make that trip, but public duties chain me down here, and I can only envy you its pleasures." He continued, "Now I have been thinking over a message I want you to take from me to the miners where you visit. I have very large ideas of the mineral wealth of our nation. I believe it practically inexhaustible. During the war, when we were adding a couple of $1 million every day to our national debt, I did not care about encouraging the increase in the volume of our precious metals. We had the country to save first. But now that the rebellion is overthrown and we know pretty near the amount of our national debt, the more gold and silver we mine makes the payment of that debt so much the easier." Lincoln was thinking of the hundreds of thousands of soldiers who would be looking for work after the fighting concluded, and of the immigrants who were then pouring into the country who would also need jobs. "I intend to point them to the gold and silver that waits for them in the West," he said. "Tell the miners from me that I shall promote their interests to the utmost of my ability, because their prosperity is the prosperity of the nation, and we shall prove in a very few years that we are indeed the treasury of the world." Lincoln told Colfax and Cole that he was thinking of taking up his residence in California after his term of office was over. He had often spoken to friends of this possibility, for he thought that California would offer better opportunities for his sons than any of the older states. He hoped that Colfax would bring him back a good report of what his keen and practiced observation would note in the country he was about to see for the first time. At about 3 p.m, Lincoln and his wife Mary left the White House for a carriage ride. Mrs. Lincoln later remembered that April 14, 1865 was the happiest day of the president's life. The president was funny and in high spirits. He told her that, when his presidency ended, he intended to take her and their family to Europe, and upon his return to go to California, over the Rocky Mountains, and see their soldiers digging out gold to pay the national debt. After supper, the president had a second visit with Speaker Colfax, who found Lincoln still in high spirits. As he and Mrs. Lincoln walked out the White House door on their way to attend a play at Ford's Theater, he turned to the speaker and said, "Don't forget, Colfax, to tell those miners that that is my speech to them. A pleasant journey to you. I will telegraph you at San Francisco. Goodbye." Schuyler Colfax had not yet left Washington when he learned that Lincoln had been shot at Ford's Theater. He rushed to the room in which the president's body lay in its death throes, and when the lifeless body was sent back to Illinois, he accompanied it there. He delivered a eulogy of the president in Chicago before leaving for the West, and when he reached Salt Lake City, he gave another eulogy before a crowd of 6,000 persons assembled in the Mormon Tabernacle. Cornelius Cole was in a sleeping car in a train on its way to New York when he was awakened with the news of the shooting. In his memoirs, Cole said that he had always looked upon this unexampled crime as the culmination of a spirit engendered by slavery and the legitimate offspring of man's inhumanity to man. April 14, 1865 would be remembered as a tragic day in the history of the United States and in the life of the Lincoln family. It was also a momentous day in the minds and hearts of Californians, many of whom had hoped to welcome the president into their midst, but now realized that they never would. In the days and weeks and years that followed, their memories of him grew. Men and women and children who had known him and who had played important roles in the history of the Western state as he served in the White House were collected, assembled, reviewed, and recorded for history. A history that forms a fascinating but little-known part of the story of the great president, and that will be told in the sections that follow. 2. A Western Free State Man. When Lincoln was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives in 1848, he declared that he was a Northern man, or rather a Western Free State man. George Ashman, a member of the same Congress who also presided over the political convention that nominated Lincoln for president in 1860, described him as a man of Western origin and growth who has grown with the marvelous growth of that marvelous region. In October 1864, Henry Bellows, a Unitarian clergyman and president of the U.S. Sanitary Commission, a private organization created to provide physical and spiritual comfort for sick and wounded soldiers, presented Lincoln with a box containing gold crystals sent to him from California. Lincoln was thankful for it, not because of the money it was worth, he never cared inordinately for money, but because it aroused in him images of the beautiful Western state he was more than ever anxious to visit, a state which produces such wonderful things and such a generous people. On March 21, 1865, only weeks before his tragic death, he told his California-based friend Charles Maltby, "I have long desired to see California. The production of her gold mines has been a marvel to me, and her stand for the Union, her generous offerings to the Sanitary Commission, and her loyal representatives have endeared your people to me, and nothing would give me more pleasure than a visit to the Pacific shore." Lincoln's Western roots and outlook influenced his life from beginning to end, inspiring his interest in the vast expanses of land that stretched off to the Pacific Ocean. Importantly, it caused him to look to the Western state for support during the Civil War, and inspired the immense gratitude he expressed for the gold and silver it sent to help finance the Union war effort and the military support it gave to his efforts to end the Confederate rebellion. California was, after all, a Western free state, Western in its geography, culture, and politics, and free, at least in theory, as the Civil War engulfed the nation. Lincoln's life as a Western free state man began on February 12, 1809, when he was born in Hardin, now LaRue, County, in the then western state of Kentucky. It continued when his father moved his family in the fall of 1816 to Perry, later part of Spencer County, in Indiana, another western state, and continued in 1830 when the family moved farther west to Macon County, Illinois. When he reached the age of 21, Lincoln moved by himself yet farther west to the frontier town of New Salem, Illinois, where he began life as a part-time postmaster and store clerk. In 1832, he volunteered for military service in the Black Hawk War, a short but historically important conflict with the Sauk and Fox Native peoples, who sought to return from west of the Mississippi to the territory in Illinois that had been taken from them by the white settlers. He began his career as an attorney in the western frontier town of Springfield, Illinois, where he married the Kentucky-born Mary Todd in 1842 and became a father. His first son, Robert Todd Lincoln, was born in 1843. His second, named Edward Baker Lincoln in honor of his close friend and fellow lawyer Edward D. Baker, was born in 1846. Baker was eventually to draw his attention even farther west to California. When, where, and how Lincoln first learned of California is not perfectly clear, although it was very probably when he met men who had visited there, settled there, or entered into its political life. John Hanks was one of the earliest such men. A first cousin of Lincoln's mother, Nancy Hanks Lincoln, he was born in Beardstown, Kentucky in 1802 and lived with the Lincoln family in Kentucky for 4 years, working with young Abraham farming corn, leveling trees, and building fences. Hanks moved westward to Macon County, Illinois in 1828 and helped persuade Lincoln's father to bring the Lincoln family to Illinois in 1830. When Lincoln's father soon returned to Indiana, Abraham remained with Hanks. In 1831, the two young men piloted a flatboat down the Ohio and Mississippi rivers to New Orleans, where Lincoln saw black slaves being cruelly abused. In 1832, both Hanks and Lincoln served in the Black Hawk War. Responding to news of the discovery of gold in California in 1849, Hanks joined a wagon train that traveled westward across the plains and mountains to the gold fields. He worked there as a gold miner for 3 years before returning to Illinois with little more than the clothes on his back. There he could and almost certainly did tell Lincoln of his experiences in the West and in California. Charles Maltby was another such man. He had been born in Vermont in 1811, but came west to Illinois with his father in 1828 and began work as a farmer. After Lincoln came west to New Salem, Maltby and Lincoln became close friends there. They worked together during the day in a log storehouse that a man named Denton Offutt had retained Lincoln to manage and visited the townspeople in the evening. Lincoln occasionally indulged in sports and games, wrestling, jumping, and pitching quoits, but Maltby recalled that those activities were never allowed to interfere with his duties or studies. Starting at about 8 o'clock in the evening, Lincoln read voraciously, studying grammar, reading law books. He was already thinking about becoming a lawyer, and enjoying poetry. Around 11 o'clock, Lincoln and Maltby spread blankets on the store counter and made themselves as comfortable as they could to go to sleep. When he was president, Lincoln told a reporter from San Francisco who was in Washington, "I know Maltby, for I slept with him 6 months." Maltby confirmed the statement years later, remembering that when he and Lincoln lived in New Salem, blankets were spread upon the counter after they finished their evening reading, and they then retired to rest on their hard couch, which prepared them for the labors and duties of the coming day. Like Lincoln, Maltby served briefly in the Black Hawk War. When Offutt's storehouse failed in early 1832, Lincoln and Maltby bought a large log storehouse on the banks of the Sangamon River and made preparations to accept products delivered there by a steamer. The steamer came to the storehouse with a good delivery, but on its return they found it had been badly damaged by the twisting river and gave up the project. Maltby moved to a nearby county but maintained his friendship with Lincoln until he left for California in the Gold Rush year of 1849, traveling with his wife in a wagon train. Another of Lincoln's earliest Western friends was James Fraser Reed, who served with him in the Black Hawk War and became one of his early legal clients. He was one of the executors of the estate of Jacob M. Early, a man who was killed in 1838 in a violent political dispute, and called on Lincoln to help him sell off some land that Early had owned. Lincoln did this and continued to represent Reed in other matters in the early 1840s. In 1845, Reed became the U.S. pension agent for Springfield. But on April 14, 1846, he led a train of covered wagons that left Springfield to head west across the plains. It included a family known as the Donners, who would later become famous for the tragedy that struck them. On October 5th, at a place called Iron Point in what later became the state of Nevada, Reed intervened in a fight between two of the wagon drivers, and when one of them attacked him, Reed stabbed him in the chest. The stabbed man's death so enraged the other travelers that they threatened to kill Reed if he didn't leave them. So he and a teamster named Walter Heron headed out through increasing mounds of freezing snow, eventually making it to Sutter's Fort in California's Sacramento Valley. They tried to return to help the Donners avoid freezing death and hunger, but were not able to make it through the snow, and the Donners resorted at last to the grisly offense of cannibalism. Remaining in California, Reed spent some time in the Napa Valley recovering from his mountain ordeal before serving in minor political offices, trying his hand at mining gold and finally settling in San Jose in 1874. While traveling to California, he carried some documents relating to Lincoln and the service they shared in the Black Hawk War. Discovered years later in the California State Library, they are muster rolls in Lincoln's own writing, recording details of his, Reed's, and other men's militia service in the 1832 conflict. They had been left to Reed by his Black Hawk War commander and were considered important enough by Reed that he carried them all the way to California, where they still survive. Historical documents treasured by Lincoln students.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?